Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Okay, but a little bit later than usual on this Thursday evening. Delighted to be joined by John Giles. Evening, John.
Evening, Nathan.
So there's a lot to get to. We've got an international break coming up and a huge couple of games for Martin O'Neill and the Republic of Ireland. We'll get to that, but I do want to talk about last weekend in the Premier League. One of the more interesting because we had the clash of the top two. Liverpool and Manchester City have served up some classics in recent times.
Yeah.
And we get a scoreless draw at Anfield. Yeah. Was this one of those games that was an interesting tactical battle to watch where they cancelled each other out, or was it just not a very good game?
I don't believe in cancelling each other out, Nathan, at all. The way you cancel each other out was by brilliant football and scoring, or not score goals, but make chances. I thought the two teams, I was really looking forward to the match and I was dreadfully disappointed in it. Both teams, City were unbelievably nervous, that I thought I'd never see from a Guardiola team. But I thought his attitude was, wherever we play, whatever we do, we go out and we impose ourselves on the opposition. Like last year at Liverpool, it didn't work for one reason or another. They didn't play well, Liverpool well. But from the start, and I think the history of the results over the years got to the team and to him. You know, because when they went down, they didn't play. They didn't play at all, giving the ball away. And luckily enough for them, Liverpool didn't play well themselves, but they were on top for the first 20 minutes or so. But I was very, very disappointed in that. And you could see by Guardiola, even at the end, although they missed the penalty, he was quite happy with the point. Now, I never thought I would see him like that. I never put him down for being happy with the result and the way that they played. And Liverpool were a bit better, but they weren't that much better then, because the three players that we expected so much from didn't play well. I mean, Salah's having a really, really bad time. So, you know, I've heard about, they cancel each other out. Well, you can cancel each other out with brilliant play. That wasn't the case. I think they cancelled each other out with poor play. And it was a very, very disappointing performance.
So City, as you mentioned, historically have a shocking record at Anfield over the last 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
But also in the last year, Liverpool have beaten them three times. There was the 4-3, which was 4-1 for a long period. Yeah. There was the 3-0. Is it not smart management in a way from Guardiola, realising that maybe there's almost a kryptonite of Liverpool, that they're the one team that have figured City out and he has to approach them differently to
what way did he approach it, Nathan? You know, if you're giving the ball away where you don't normally give the ball away, that's not helping things. You know, like you take the game on its merits. I mean, all the matches that happened in the past is history. You know, I experienced a certain extent at Leeds. When we played Cardiff City, we played them in the Cup over 1 year, and they'd beaten Leeds over, certain teams had beaten Leeds, a lot of teams had beaten Leeds over the years. And, like, bogey teams, they're a bogey team. I never, ever
believed in any of that.
Believed in it.
Right.
I thought it was the biggest load of nonsense gone. Whatever happened in the past, happened in the past. And I'm not saying it doesn't affect him, but it shouldn't. Shouldn't affect Guardiola going to, like, this is a separate game. In fact, they should have won it. If they scored a penalty, they win the game. And that's without playing well. So it can change. You know, I think it's nonsense, a superstition going, oh, this is a bogey ground, this is that. It can play on players' minds. But managers of his quality, I wouldn't expect it. I expect him, this is a lot of nonsense. Go out there and play. This is a separate match. This is what we do. And in the end, Liverpool got away with the penalty incident. But, you know, Liverpool themselves are not playing well. The three forward players that are so dangerous haven't played well this year, although they've won quite a few matches. But, Salah's lost his confidence somehow or other, although, you know, Klopp did take him off in a couple of matches, which I don't think he should have done. But anyway, Liverpool didn't play the way they can play as well. I thought it was a poor performance from both teams.
The nervousness you talk about is interesting. Yeah. I haven't heard that mentioned before, because a lot of the analysis was about what Guardiola did with his two fullbacks, who were so important to the way City wanted to play, and that Mendy and Walker stayed a lot deeper than they would normally. And I guess then that maybe feeds into the nervousness that
I don't think
City,
they did stay any deeper though, Nathan. I don't think they actually consciously, they were put under pressure a lot because Liverpool had most of the ball. But if you look back on the match, Walker was down the right wing. But the only time you can do that fullback is go down at the right time. Like if it's on to go, this idea that they're going to stay back, you know, to defend, that's not what happens. If you have a right back like Walker, actually go at the right time, he goes forward. There's no problem with that. And then the left back becomes on the cover position. Like, Walker did get forward quite a lot. And he wasn't supporting. He gave the ball away. But he did get forward. And Mendy got forward. If you look at the whole match, they did get forward a lot, but didn't do much with it because they weren't supported and played in the with the freedom that they normally play. So the idea of the fullback staying back or doing that or being nervous in the way that they play, the best way to actually attack and keep the opposition away is to have the ball. You know, you have to go. There's only one ball on the pitch.
So why didn't they keep the ball better?
I don't know. They were nervous. They were jumpy. They were playing like a team that was, oh, the history of this thing is getting to us. And, you know, we got hammered here last year. I don't know what the reason was, but I only noticed, watched them playing. This is a nervous team.
Yeah. Have you had that experience? Have you had games where things just didn't feel right, where unusually you felt nervous? Where you're almost a bit rattled?
I did when I played for Manchester. Funny enough, when I went to Leeds and when we got settled down at Leeds, I never felt that. I felt at Manchester United for the last couple of seasons there because we were a poor team. The morale wasn't good. We'd go away and you know, we played at Arsenal and we got beaten 4-1. Sort of beaten before you went out. I had plenty of it with the Irish team. Plenty of it. You know, I remember going out in some matches and you'd be nearly, the manager would be blessing themselves. I had loads of that with the Irish team. And come in afterwards and say, they weren't that good, were they? I was like, oh, it's too late. I mean, this is what I tried to stop when I became manager myself. With loads of matches, the morale was there. We had a selection committee of five picking a team. There was no confidence in it.
You were doubting yourself.
Doubting, it was more than that. We were beaten before we went out, you know? But I was part of that. But the Leeds team, over after the first year, second year, there was Bobby Collins, who was a great leader, and the lads were good, and Revy was good. So we were Dom was always cautious, but we weren't scared of them.
Mm.
You know, like we didn't go out and not play. We sometimes we had to defend. But like looking at I don't remember going out with the Leeds team and looking like Manchester City did the other day. I remember that with the Manchester United team, and I remember being part of it with the Irish team. But with the Leeds United team, were a lot of tough nuts in it. And we had histories to beat teams that we'd never beaten before, and we beat them. And that was all attitude of mind. I mean, that's where I've learned from it. That's my experience of playing football. But looking at Manchester City, it was as if, oh God, we were beaten 4-1 here last year, where they went 4 up, they were killing it. And it was only late on in the game when Liverpool actually didn't play all that well, the City got back into it and might have won it in the end.
Mm.
But looking at the whole match, I found it very, very disappointing. I was very disappointed in Manchester City. And I read too, now they cancel each other out. I don't believe that. I've seen teams cancel each other out when they 2-2 and by brilliant football, not by nervous, bad football.
Yeah, it's funny because we sort of associate this City team and Guardiola with a real confidence, and
yes,
they maraud around the pitch. And yes, Liverpool are comfortably the best team they face this season.
Yeah.
Does that then raise questions for you about what City can do, probably more in the Champions League, because generally they're going to steamroller most of the teams in the Premier League. But when they are playing, Liverpool or Madrid or Barcelona or Bayern Munich, that nervousness might come back.
Well, funny enough, it's the only time I've seen a Guardiola team be nervous like that. I've never seen it before. That's why I was so surprised at it. Despite last year's dead and gone. You go and you play next year. But they didn't play like that. It was like a hangover. Oh, we've got to be careful. I didn't think I'd ever see it from a Guardiola team. But it happened. And luckily enough for them, Liverpool weren't playing well enough, especially the front three, to take advantage of it, especially in the first half of the match. And then they got the penalty at the end. But it was, like even the talk after, oh yeah, we've got a result here, you know, we've got a point here, it's more than we got last year. Like, last year's gone. I'm just disappointed in the performance of the teams. I thought the quality was very poor. I was expecting an awful lot. And definitely more disappointed with Guardiola than Klopp. I never thought I'd see it from him.
I was at the game on Sunday, and it was noticeable in the warm-up, Mo Salah didn't look like a striker, even in the warm-up, who'd scored 44 goals last year. Everything just looked slightly off. And you did wonder, you know, you can never read too much into what's happening when they're shooting into a goalkeeper who's ready for the shot from 20 yards out again and again and again. But there would never seem to be a good connection. He seemed to scuff things. Yeah. And he just seemed to drop his head from time to time. But how do you get out of it? If you're a Liverpool supporter watching that, and Salah is so important to what you want to achieve, what does Klopp do with him?
Well, first of all, the manager can only do so much with a player. Player has to do it for himself. I mean, this is the comment that Mourinho made about Pogba when he said a manager. He said, well, first of all, the manager has to do the best for himself, get the best out of himself. And like, I'm only guessing now, Nathan, because you can't look into anybody's head. But what we do see is not, well, the great thing about football, whatever is the fault manifests on the pitch, we can all see it. You can't hide it. And at the moment, he's not playing well. And at the moment, it's confidence in him. The things that he was doing last year, that was second nature to do all the various things. We see, you don't know what's going through anybody's head. You know, footballers are the same as everybody. Human beings are the same as anybody else. I don't know him. I don't know him at all. But I've seen it with players in the past myself. Somebody has a great season. The pressure before they even start is on them.
Mm.
You know, I've seen
expectation,
yeah, especially goal scorers. Your goal scorers have to relax. They have to have the confidence. They have to have a certain thing about them. Like I mentioned Jimmy Greaves to you. I know I'll go back over the old days. Jimmy Greaves. Jimmy Greaves had it. Some you win, some you lose. You know, I'll get the next one. He wouldn't even think about it.
Didn't weigh in his mind. The second the chance was gone, it was gone.
Jimmy Greaves was doing it for 15 years. You know what I mean? And Jimmy Greaves, like, if you look at his goal scoring, like, Alan Shearer got the most goals in the Premiership. Jimmy Greaves scored 50 goals more than Alan Shearer before the records were written out. And not him, Alan Clark, who played with at Leeds. Arrogant bugger. You know, Mick Jones was a sensitive lad. Like, if Mick Jones, I'm only giving an example. Yeah. Mick Jones, if he said, come on, Mick, he'd get worse. Like, you said, Alan, Mr. Chant, come on, Alan. Tell you to F off. Right? But he'd scored, if he had a chance, he was going to score the next one. Mick wouldn't. So you don't know what's going through anybody's head. Here's Salah after a great season, 44 goals. Now the pressure's on him again. Is he going to score 44? If he doesn't score 44 goals this year, he's having a poor season.
Mm.
Now, I'm only guessing, but this is what goes through players' heads, particularly strikers. If their confidence goes a little bit, Nathan, it's gone a lot. Like, in a minute, if I play in the middle of the field, if I gave a bad pass, it didn't mean that much. He didn't want to do it. But somebody missing a chance,
yeah,
it tells on them.
Might have 80 passes,
yeah,
in a game.
I've seen lads say, I don't want the next chance. They'd stay out of the box. But I don't know what's going through Salah's head. But there's something.
It doesn't seem like he's hiding away yet. That he still wants to be in and around the area. He still wants
has
to ball
be
in
and around
positions.
There. He has to be in and around there. You know what I mean? You'd see the great thing about it, you'd see him hiding.
Mm.
You'd see him hiding, but you can't see what's going through his head. You know. But what we do see is not knocking the chances in. He's knocking them along. So we don't. I don't know. But it's usually put down as a lack of confidence. Now, I don't think Klopp did him any favors in the first few matches where he subbed him a couple of times. I think that's the worst thing you can do for anybody whose confidence is a bit low anyway. And the second time he sat me, he wasn't pleased about it, you know, because when you're taken off as a professional footballer, actually, Nathan, you're being humiliated in front of 50,000 people. That's what you feel like. And nobody likes it. Nobody likes it. So when he was taken off in a couple of matches, Salah, he would really feel bad about this. He knows he's not playing well.
Mm.
And here now he's being humiliated in front of...
Is it that extreme? Is it the feeling that you get?
Totally. Terrible. Terrible. I was very lucky. I wasn't substituted very often. But I was playing, I came back after an injury and we were playing at Bristol in a match. And for the first time, Don substituted me. I felt awful. You have to feel bad. You're being subbed, Nathan. You know, like, we've all taken for granted now. Other players being subbed, we're used to it. But when it's the individual side, because what you're being told is we can do better without you.
Somebody else.
Or somebody else coming on the pitch. That's what you're being told. Yeah. And nobody likes it. You know, you see most of the players come out and they're thrown that. Some of them come off okay. But Salah scored 44 goals last year. And now, after, what, we've ten matches into the season, the manager's saying off because I think somebody else can do better than you. I think Klopp slipped up on that with him. Because, see, we don't know Salah. You don't know him, do you? Mm. I don't know him. I haven't a clue what he's like. I don't know whether he's strong-minded, whether he isn't strong-minded, whether he can take or he can't. Don't know.
Yeah.
But what we're seeing at the moment is not good. So there's a problem for him, you know?
Yeah.
Problem for Liverpool.
And I guess that's the difficulty for Klopp. That's management, is figuring out whether taking Mo Salah off gets... Yeah. The right reaction, yeah, or whether actually it just digs away a little bit more of that confidence.
You should know him, though, you know, because you know, I've known played with players where some of them hard nuts, you know, hard skinned, others a bit sensitive to it, you know, more so than others. That's what manager does, you know, because now they have psychologists in, but in my time in playing, the manager was the psychologist, you know, whether they needed a hard bit, a soft bit, and everything else. See, Clough was good like that. I mean, you hear Martin O'Neill talking about him. You give Martin a hard time, and he'd put his arm around John Robertson or whoever you had to do it. You know, it's getting the best out of players, and everybody's different. Some can take it, some are hard and say, oh, couldn't care less. Other lads are sensitive lads. Oh, you don't know.
Yeah.
But at the moment, it's not working for Salah, and it's certainly not working for the front three at Liverpool.
We'll get on to Martin O'Neill and some of those issues that you've just been talking about in a moment, but I just want to mention Manchester United. So 2-0 down at home against Newcastle.
Yeah.
It looked as though the end was nigh for Jose Mourinho, and they turn it around. Alexis Sanchez scores that injury time winner. It was a bizarre game. There were many bizarre formations and selections as the game went on for Manchester United. Did Jose Mourinho find something in that second half?
I'm only reading about it, Nathan, and I think, looking back on this, this could be a bad day for Mourinho.
Why?
Because the talk we heard was the players had a big say at halftime. Pogba had a big say at halftime of what we would do, what we wouldn't do, and that. That's not Mourinho. Mourinho and top managers don't let that happen, Nathan. They don't let the players, they're in command of it. Now, they got away with it, right? I think it's a bad thing that happened to them, because what the players are going to say, we'll say the same next time. We said had to say last time and we won. Now, I think at halftime, it gives the players an opportunity or a right to say, I think this is wrong, boss, we should be doing this, we should be doing that. And from what I can gather of the thing, Mourinho went along with it. And they get a result, right? So
you think the players will be emboldened now?
Totally. I think it's losing control of the players when you do that. You have to. I mean, I need to manage the top manager. I say, what are you talking about? I'll tell you what to do.
Mm.
Like, I remember last year, Mourinho, when he was at Chelsea, and somebody said one time to him, I see John Terry is the big influence in the dressing room. He said, no, he's not. I'm the big influence in the dressing room. Now, if we take what we read, and to get the result he did, it wasn't him in the dressing room. And from what I can gather, I'd believe it, that Pogba said something, we should be playing this, we should be back there, we should be back there. And see, when players do that, Nathan, what they want to do then when they go in the second half is to prove themselves right. Right? So you get the effort. That's okay for the half because they won the match. But I think it's weakened Mourinho's position.
There's no way as a manager of embracing that and that collective came together at halftime?
Yeah, for every match.
Can you not take that forward? Is there not a way of...
No, it doesn't work that way, Nathan. The manager has to be in charge. When you open that to the dressing room, now you get anarchy. Because all players have a different view of what they want. Defenders will want to do it in a certain way. You know, they'll want 10 players back. The forwards will want more players attacking. That's what managers do. That's what the great managers do. They dominate the situation. They dominate all the players. This is what I want you to do.
Mm.
Right? I remember like Don used to say, okay, you don't agree with me. Do what you want when you become a manager. But when I'm the manager here, you do what I want. This is what you do. You know, because I saw the dressing room last time when I was at Manchester United, where we had a bad season, and I was part of the dressing room, and Matt did lose it a bit. But at the start of the next season, boom, he clamped down straight away. I don't want
Why
any of this nonsense.
Why did he lose it? How did he lose the dressing room?
Because it becomes an anarchy. Joe Bloggs thinks that way. Joe Bloggs, nobody plays. That's why you have a manager. The manager knits them all together. They can all say what they want to say in a team talk when the manager invites it. They say, right, now you've all had your say, like I said with Don, that this is what we do. This is what I want to do. You see, this is what made Clough a great manager. Clough was an arrogant so-and-so. Arrogant sons, but he dominated everybody. Wouldn't listen to anybody. Like we were joking beforehand, his thing was we've been having an argument. Well, we've had our discussion, and we both agree I'm right.
Hmm.
But he wouldn't even have a discussion. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And Mourinho, at his best over the years, I guarantee you, he didn't have any discussions. Now he comes to 2-0 down, and the players now feel they have a right to do it, and he has to listen, and he listened, and they won. This is going to be a bad thing for him in the long run.
All right. So you mentioned Brian Clough. One of his disciples is Martin O'Neill, who seems to bring those learnings from 30, 40 years ago with him into the current Republic of Ireland camp. The last two competitive games have been pretty much humiliation for Ireland against Wales and Denmark. They've Wales and Denmark coming up twice in the space of 5 days. Again, though, it's sort of off-the-pitch conversations and little controversies bubbling under already again this week. We had James McLean out in front of the media. So Harry Arter has returned. There were clear the air talks with Roy Keane. He's back, and it seems all is rosy in the camp. James McLean comes out and says that, well, Arthur shouldn't have stayed away the last time, that, you know, you'd have to put it into my head to keep me away from playing Ireland.
Yeah, well, that was his opinion. But what's happened, like in the comments that we've heard from McLean, is that Arthur has become out the bad guy. He thinks he shouldn't have done it. He should have played. But where's Roy Keane come into it? Right? Arthur didn't start all this row. It was Roy Keane started the row, verbally abused him, and that's why he stayed out.
Mm.
So Arthur, all of a sudden now, by McLean's comments, is the bad guy for not turning up. And why did he not turn up? That McLean, the way McLean is talking, well, you know, in my day, like you had to take all the stick. That you, okay, I came across that as well. But this wasn't a football matter that Arthur was he stayed away. This was the assistant manager verbally abusing him.
Does McLean not coming out though not suggest that actually the feeling within the squad is that what Roy Keane did or what Roy Keane said wasn't that bad, that it shouldn't have been enough to force Harry Arthur out of the squad?
It doesn't matter what the others think. It's Harry Arthur's the one that's to blame. And I believe the comments that were supposed to have been made, Nathan, now you read them as well. That nothing to do with football.
Questioning his fitness.
Well, he was questioning his character anyways. You were always injured or whatever, and all your so-and-so this and your so-and-so that. And so what McLean is saying, in his day, he came across coaches who, and the lads of today are a bit soft and that. But I don't think he had anybody, assistant manager, coming up to him and accusing him of being injured all the time and all the various things. It's apples and oranges. Like, McLean is a good lad, and I like him, I like his attitude playing. He said he would wear the green shirt all the time. That's his opinion. Doesn't mean he's right and Arthur's wrong. But what's come out of it, Arthur did nothing wrong, as far as I could see, in this particular issue with the assistant manager, except to say, look, I can't stand for that, and I'm not going to turn up for the next match. So I think McLean is getting it mixed up. He would have turned up for the next match, but he didn't. He wasn't at the end of the verbal abuse.
Sure.
He's talking about a different situation altogether. The other difference was years ago, the coach would have said, what do you think you're doing, and give me rollicking and all that. This wasn't a football matter that Arthur was objecting to. This was a personal matter that he felt was absolutely wrong, and it was bad behaviour from the assistant manager.
Mm.
That's been written out of it now. And I think it's wrong. I think it's unfair on Arthur to be put in that position. And I think McLean should be a little bit more careful about what he says at times.
There's a lot of injuries again for Martin O'Neill to deal with. Seamus Coleman is missing from this game. Robbie Brady is out. Shane Long is still a bit of a doubt heading into the match, and a whole host of other minor problems as well. Like, Brian Kerr was making a point at the weekend that because Ireland had suffered two such heavy defeats, that the automatic reaction as a footballer is that you don't let that happen again, that regardless of what happens over the next few games, this won't be another 4-1 and a 5-1, that you dig in, you get a little bit tighter.
Yeah.
Is that what you'd expect, that these will be two close games that Ireland may not win, but that there'll certainly be a bit more structure, a bit more cohesiveness about the performances?
Well, you would hope so. It doesn't always happen to be the case, Nathan. First of all, there's going to be quite a few changes from the players that played. Hopefully, you know, players that would have been in the team in the two matches would come back, and that would immediately strengthen the team for a better performance. But you know, you can't guarantee anything. You see, if we talk that way, that they got, does it take two hidings
to get a reaction?
To get a reaction, you know, these are international matches, and these are competitive matches. So you shouldn't need a hiding to get a reaction. You're a professional footballer. You go out there to stop these hidings, that you don't need a reaction. You know, that's the way it works. As it happens, it works in a way. Yeah, we better start picking up. Now, my attitude that over the years was, it's like a team that, the beats Manchester United in the cup, and then goes the next week and beating 3-0 themselves. They might be a third division team. Why? Because they were up for that match, right? They're up for the match. You should be up for every match. It shouldn't be a special match that you're up. If you're a professional footballer, what makes the real players is their attitude is the same for every match.
Yeah.
You don't wait for a hiding then to pick it up. So that type of stuff worries me when I hear that. Why do we get a hiding anyway? You know, why do we have to wait to get a hiding to pick it up again? Hopefully we'll play better in this match and the next two matches than we did to do it in the prep. I hope so. But we shouldn't have to be picking up. Now, I know we're going to do a few weakened players, a few players that were weakened, and hopefully with better players.
But that ability to raise your performance, which Irish teams have sort of become known for down the years, is that reflective of the level that they're playing in, week out, that their top level would be good enough for maybe a Champions League side, but they just don't have that consistency in them?
You see, there's a different thing here, Nathan. You're talking about international matches, which you have every so often. Like I was talking about, say, league matches where you're playing week in and week out, and I've seen them up their game for and then down the game. For the Irish matches, like it's international matches only ever so often. So what you're entitled to do then, because you're not, it's not a club, raise, in other words, your performance for the international team, right, as a collection, is better than your individual performance for your club team. So the Irish teams, generally speaking, the attitude of the Irish teams over the years has been brilliant. I've never seen an Irish team didn't do the best they could. Sometimes we weren't good enough. A lot of times we weren't good enough.
Even in Cardiff a month ago, that was the best they could have done.
Well, it was a very poor team. I think you'd have to look at the setup. The setup of the team wasn't great. You know, you have to go back to the manager as well. But it was a poor team, Nathan. You know, we had a lot of young lads coming into the team. We had five or six players missing, whatever it might be. And I don't think it was for a lack of effort.
Right.
On it. It was for a lack of ability on that particular night. I think the hiding we got against Denmark was a different kettle of fish all the same, because a lot of the responsibility has to go back to the manager. He made two or three changes at half time that when we were 2-1 down, finished up 5-1. So that would be a tactical change. But even in that match against, you couldn't blame the players for not trying on the night. I've never seen a nice team actually that didn't try. Not good enough, but didn't try. And when it all comes together, you know, we beat Germany and beat certain teams, and certainly wouldn't have the ability. But the spirit has always been good, and I wouldn't expect the spirit to be anything less going into the match at the weekend.
We will have full live commentary of both games, the game against Denmark on Saturday night and the game against Wales on Tuesday night, live here on Off the Ball. Just before we wrap up, Martin O'Neill was making some comments. I know you noticed them about Alan Shearer, and just again, having a little bit of a pop back because of Shearer's criticism of Cyrus Christie on Match of the Day.
I think he was wrong, actually. I mean, Shearer was a pundit on the day, and what I saw the match, Christie wasn't good. But I think what Martin is saying, well, I think Shearer should know the situation before he makes his comment. Well, nobody knows the situation. And what Martin is actually saying in the paper is that the player was told by the manager to stay forward and not stay forward anyway. But how does Martin know that? Nobody knows that. And then there was a cruel remark at the end of it. No need for it, I don't think. That, well, Alan Shearer, if he knew that, he wouldn't have lost seven matches. And he was in a very difficult position at Newcastle. He had 8 matches to save them, and he didn't save them. It's the only time he's been in management. But Shearer is given his opinion as a pundit on the day of the particular match. You know, I don't like Martin does punditry himself.
Yeah, sure.
Right? So there's no Shearer saying, or maybe he thinks it, but he's not going to punditry himself. Well, I don't agree with what he said.
Yeah.
I don't agree with what he said there. So,
Is that Clough, like the way O'Neill acts around those sort of remarks, from what you remember, like biting back, not just being able to let things go?
No, I don't know Martin that well, but I'm only, that particular thing I find is unnecessary. I mean, he's saying the criticism of Chris was unnecessary and harsh. Well, that's what Shearer believes in, but you can't say, well, if Shearer had known what the manager told him. Martin O'Neill doesn't know what the manager told him. I don't. Nobody knows what the manager told him. Martin, with Shearer doing his job, he can go and only go on what he sees in the match, and what I saw in the match is that Christie, what he was told and not told, was in a bad position. I mean, Shearer, as a pundit, can say, well, the manager must have told him to do that, but I don't know. Nobody knows. But he can only do what he does on the day. But I don't mind Martin responding to that. But I think the remark at the end was, he's talking about it being unnecessary, Shearer's remarks. Well, Martin's remark was certainly unnecessary about Shearer's managerial career or non-career.
John, great stuff. You'll be back in next Thursday. Hopefully we'll have something positive to talk about with the Republic of Ireland for the first time in quite a while.
Fingers crossed, Nathan.
Great stuff, John.
Thanks, Nathan.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.